Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. A four-story mixed-use building is going up in the Selwood neighborhood of Portland on a stretch of Southeast 13th Avenue where the average building is two stories high. Over the past few months of construction, someone keeps spray painting on the plywood front of the building. Four stories is obscene. Portland's population is booming and the housing market is getting tight. Once a mecca for low-cost housing, the city is rapidly being transformed into a haven for the rich, while low-income residents are forced from traditionally affordable neighborhoods to the perimeters of the city. Meanwhile, a building boom is destroying much of the older affordable housing stock in the city and replacing it with large market-rate apartment buildings. This morning, we talk with Rob Justice, who's founder of Join and who co-owns Home First Development. We'll talk about the current housing crisis in Portland. What are the forces feeding it? And what are the solutions? Rob, welcome to Locus Focus. Well, let's start with this building in my neighborhood, because I feel like it's really emblematic of what a lot of people are feeling. The fact that somebody spray paints the graffiti, it gets painted over, somebody spray paints it again. There's a lot of anger about these four, five, six-story buildings that are going in all around in old and small neighborhoods of Portland and are creating a lot of, say, disgruntledness on the part of the people who live in the neighborhoods. And some of the disgruntledness is just people don't like change. But I think there's something else afoot. And that's what I wanted to start by talking about.
You know, I think there's two levels of frustration. There is absolutely a frustration with folks who, you know, have had the luxury and the privilege to live in great Portland neighborhoods. And then the other level of frustration is with the population who can't afford to live here anymore. And so my history and background, you know, is been committed to working with low-income people. You know, for years I worked with folks on the streets. Since 2009, our little company, Home First Development, created an alternative model, funding model, to build affordable housing affordably, with trying to respond to the housing crisis that exists. But, you know, overall, I feel like Portland is, you know, in denial about, you know, we're a big city with big city problems, and our government is small town.
Well, I think that people are very unaware. In fact, I only found out recently that our population went over 600,000 in the last year. I, as of a few months ago, it was 609,000 and change. And I think a lot of people still think of Portland as that city that's under 400,000, that was kind of like a large, small town, and everybody knew each other, and we basically were laid back, and everybody cared about everybody else, which was probably never true, but at least it was a nice
Well, yeah, myth. The illusion was there.
And you were more comfortable in the illusion. And while Portland was still lingering in that illusion over the last 20 years, I would spend time in Seattle and Vancouver, which were very fast transforming themselves into large metropolitan, very, very metropolitan kind of global cities, and with lots and lots of high rises and lots of increasing density and all kinds of big city problems that come along with that. And every time I come back to Portland, I was so happy that Portland wasn't like building up in the same way and kind of squeezing out people who couldn't afford to live here.
Until
recently.
Well, I think it's been not just recently. I think it's been happening for the last, you know, two decades at least. You know, and a lot of the economic engine for that gentrification, if you will, of pushing low-income people out, has been driven by center government. You know, PDC, Portland Development Commission, and I would also put the Portland Housing Bureau in that category, has done a good job over the years of, you know, pushing low-income people, you know, out our east, and, you know, having urban renewal areas where a lot of development happens, a lot of developers make a lot of money. But, and at the same time, they have these token affordable housing projects that are within these areas, and they say, oh, well, we're doing good. Well, yeah, but look at the number of people you've displaced. And look at how much money you're making and how much money the city is lining your pockets with.
Well, I actually think it's, in some ways it goes back to the beginning of the development of the Pearl District, which was probably, 25 years ago?
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
And yet there you weren't displacing, there were some, probably some residential hotels and some other residential places.
But more industrial.
But it was mostly industrial.
Yes.
So first we displaced the industries, which is now what's happening in Central East Side, Portland.
Right.
And there is a kind of sadness that I feel when I go through that part of Northwest Portland and think about what it was like when people actually could live close to where they worked. And all those places now are on the far-flung. So industry has fled to the suburbs and all kinds of manufacturing. And then the next push is after gentrifying the Pearl District. And I think that when you said there's token affordable housing, that's what I think of, because I actually know some people who live in the Pearl District who are not wealthy. I mean, there is, and I think there's even actually some Section 8 housing in the Pearl District.
Oh, absolutely.
But what's wrong with that picture?
Well, I would describe it as tokenism. I mean, people made a lot of money. And part of my frustration is, for years, the Portland PDC, the Portland Development Commission, was responsible for affordable housing. But that wasn't really their mission. Their mission was about, if you will, building an economy, working with local developers. And unfortunately, over the last 10 years, PDC, and back in 2009, they created the Portland Housing Bureau, which basically was they took the group that was working at PDC and created its own bureau with this, again, illusion that they're going to really take on affordable housing and make that commitment. In the end, they didn't. The way they do business and the way money is spent, they're still in bed and in supporting the white for-profit developers in the city.
Well, I want to talk about what's been going on recently, because I think a lot of people who are really up in arms at what's changing in their neighborhoods now almost don't even remember when the Pearl District was redeveloped. So I'm interested in your take on what's been going on Williams Avenue for a while, and that part of Northeast and North Portland, and also what's going on now in Belmont. I mean, divisions already happened, but there's some very interesting buildings going in and close in Buckman area on around Belmont and 11th. And I'm wondering if you know, like, what are those buildings and what's behind the fact that they're going into those neighborhoods?
Well, what's behind that, to me is, again, a lot of white developers making a lot of money. Gentrification. I mean, we've been called out on nationally about the gentrification that goes on in Portland. Part of my frustration in that effort is there's this, if you will, kind of this white liberal sense of, we just got to get along. And, I have talked to electeds who reference, different developers. Say, oh, he's such a nice guy. Well, yeah, he's a nice guy, but, he, along with the city, have for decades pushed low-income people, and specifically people of color, out of the center core. So, what's driving that is, is profit, without question. I also think it's this kind of notion of, people like, well, Portland's so cool. I mean, there's this real desire, and almost like this utopian notion of, hey, I want my little space and walk to the coffee shop, but all of that has come at a price, and it's come at a price, and the people who have, really paid that price are low-income people and people of color.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about the affordable housing crisis here in Portland, and my guest is Rob Justice, who is co-owner of Home First Development. I was at a neighborhood meeting in Sellwood last month where there was a lot of concern about these four-story mixed-use buildings, which means that there's retail or commercial on the first floor, and then there's three stories of pretty small apartments, actually, that are at, quote, market rate. And the neighborhood across the board, and our neighborhood is pretty diverse. There's, I think, a lot of ranges of income and demographics in the neighborhood. It doesn't matter what part of the neighborhood it's in, these buildings are going in, and people are up in arms about it. So we had a neighborhood association meeting, and the board of the neighborhood association was basically saying at this, I guess it was the land use meeting, well, we can't really do anything about it because the city's calling the shots and we don't have any say. And then one of the person was, actually there were two people. One was an architect who I think just moved to Portland last week or something, but he was the authority. And then somebody else on the board who was saying, well, it's because of the urban growth boundary, that because we don't sprawl out into the countryside, we have to do all this infill, we have to build these high-rise buildings, or I won't call four stories a high-rise, but higher-rise buildings. And to me, that is kind of a false equation. And I wonder what your thoughts are about how much the urban growth boundary plays into the need to do this kind of building to, quote, support affordable housing.
Well, absolutely, the urban growth boundary plays into that whole density question. You know, and the whole idea of the urban growth boundary is to really, encourage that inner core development. As we were talking before, kind of who I am and what I do, is and has been about in defense and advocacy for low income people. You know, so from my perspective, the whole question of density and the need for infill and that is without question, it needs to happen.
I guess the question is, how does it happen? Because I think a lot of people aren't against density, but they don't like the way it's happening, and they don't think that the kind of density, the kind of buildings that are being put up in the name of density are actually serving the people that need to be served.
Well, no, I completely agree with that. You know, and that goes back to our form of government. I mean, one of the things I feel like for a lot of years, white developers have an incredible influence on City Hall, on different bureaus, obviously PDC, on the county. And that influence, has helped, one, a lot of developers who, again, are really nice guys, who are typically really white, nice guys, not only make a lot of money, but, at the same time, they don't donate to campaigns. My frustration is, we're a big city with big city problems, but our form of government, how our electeds function and work, is still small town politics. It's about our friends and, who we hang out with and who do we go to fundraisers with. And those folks have way too much influence. I believe that, soft corruption, and I encourage people to look that up, soft corruption. I think soft corruption in Portland, Oregon, is alive and well.
Now, what would be your solution to this? I mean, some people, like the Oregonian, has argued that we should stop having a commission form of government because it's for small towns and we should have a different style of city council.
I actually agree with that. I mean, we have this kind of silo approach, and the different commissioners have their different, fiefdoms, if you will. It also gives, I think, a lot of bureaus too much power. So, and we're not a representative government. I mean, I think that's part of my frustration. I mean, who speaks for, folks on the east side?
Well, do you think that we should do like what San Francisco does, where you have district elections and we would have, if the city would be divided into districts and each, like as we do actually with the Metro Council is elected by district. And I think that Multnomah County Commission is also elected by district.
Well, I absolutely believe that type of change needs to happen. I think we need to become more sophisticated in how we address these issues, because the way it's working now, it's displacing way too many people. And again, there's a small group of folks who are benefiting.
Well, I want to talk some more about who is making all this money and how this gets in the way of the conversation. I mean, I hear from, and I guess I want to get back to the argument about that we need density in order to build affordable housing. And
absolutely.
Okay. So yeah, I don't think anybody argues with that, but I want to kind of slice underneath the surface of that argument and see what it means, because what people are seeing going up in their neighborhoods is not affordable housing, particularly like on Williams Avenue. I know that's a real concern there. I mean, and that's a real case of driving a lot of low-income people out.
Absolutely.
And Division Street is another example.
Yeah.
And I believe what's going on in Belmont Street. I know people who are getting evicted from their apartments in Belmont Street. Their apartments are being torn down and these high-rises are going up. So how do we sever this or dissect this assumption that because we're building more housing and denser housing and smaller apartments in buildings that don't have any parking, how is this helping solve the affordable housing problem?
Well, it's not in that, the majority of units that are being built, not only are they not affordable, but, they're driving up the cost of everything, the cost of land, the cost of rents. And so one of the things that I'm seeing in Portland is where there has been an affordable housing issue for decades, but now you're seeing folks who actually, make $40,000 a year or $50,000 a year who are struggling. to live in Portland. You know, so that this disparity with not just really low-income people, but working-class folks are finding it harder to be here. And we in Portland, you know, what the response to that by a lot of developers and specifically the Portland Housing Bureau is, well, let's just put more money into the system. Well, the more money into the system is getting us very few units because the system, again, from my perspective, is corrupt. And let me be really specific about that and where I'm coming from. So we created Home First Development to build affordable housing. We are doing that without government. So our cost per unit, and being very intentional, is we're building for about $85,000 a unit. The average affordable, or I should better say, a subsidized government-funded housing is closer to $250,000 per unit. Why? Why is that? My argument is there's a lot of people, nonprofits and for-profits, that are making a lot of money off of these projects. And we have government who goes along, who says, well, that's the way it is. And on top of that, you know, very, what I would describe, arrogant bureaucrats attach all these other social agendas to these projects that also increase the cost. And they say, well, you know, so we have folks downtown who, because of their own agenda, and adhere to kind of an old way of doing things, you know, pick and choose.
Now, what do you mean by their social agendas which drive up the cost?
Well, so there, you know, I think there's a lot of, within the Housing Bureau, one, you have a bureaucracy. You know, you have 55 employees at the Housing Bureau that, you know, add a whole layer of involvement in every project. So that drives up the cost because all of a sudden, architects and general contractors are having to go to a lot more meetings than is probably necessary. You know, and then, you know, really concrete example, there's some nice ideas.
I guess what I was wondering, sure, is what are the social agendas?
I mean, well, I think they're looking at workforce training, minority and women hiring, which I would argue you can do that, if we do that, without increasing the costs. And I think part of it is they really get caught up into, it's a little bit of a beauty contest. You know, building cool buildings and focusing all of that affordability downtown.
I was thinking about Brad Pitt's buildings in New Orleans. Are you familiar with those? They were built in the Lower Nine.
Generally.
Yeah, and I actually did a tour of him a couple of years ago, and I think he spent $250,000 to $300,000 per house, and so instead of being able to bring everybody back to the Lower Nine, I think he built a couple hundred houses, and some people think they're cool architecture. Some of them are. Some of them I thought were just plain weird. But to me, it was a really sad case of somebody I think Brad Pitt really meant well, but he didn't do a whole lot to bring people home to New Orleans.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think that's what's happening in Portland. You know, there's a little bit of a delusion of innocence, this delusion that, you know, well, we're doing good, you know, and regardless of what it costs. But there isn't this real kind of cost-benefit analysis, this idea that if we can really work hard to bring down the cost, we can build more units. Let me be really specific. 3 years ago, we presented to our mayor, Charlie Hill, a proposal on how they could invest $20 million to give to not us, but to give to nonprofits that we're working with. And for that $20 million, we can leverage that with bank financing, and we could build 1,000 units. Here's the math. We've done it. We are doing it. 20 million, 1,000 units. Right now, Portland's going to vote on a bond, over $250 million. And the city's saying, yeah, we think we can build 1,300 units. Really? Our proposal was to build with 20 million, 1,000. You're building 10 times that. And the question is, where does that money go? Who gets it? And unfortunately, you know, affordable housing advocates, homeless advocates have lined themselves with, you know, these developers, both nonprofit and for-profit, to build, you know, subsidized housing that isn't affordable.
Well, I'm wondering, I know people who have some mixed feelings about this initiative that we're about to vote on in a few months, and I'm wondering what your take on it. Is this just a Band-Aid that's going to do no good? Is it something that's a good start? I mean, how do you feel like people should be really calling it into question and maybe challenging the thinking behind it?
Absolutely. So absolutely, do I believe we need to invest in more truly affordable housing? Yes, without question. However, you know, over the past, 10 years between PDC and the Portland Housing Bureau, they have spent, if you look all in, close to $1 billion. What did we get for that money? Do we really want the Portland Housing Bureau to manage $250,000 more money, where they're already telling us, we could pay me $1,300 for $250 million? Are you kidding me? There is no eye towards, bang for the buck. How can we really build more units with that money? And the Housing Bureau, to me, at the core, is part of the problem.
So are you recommending people vote for this or not vote for this?
Well, to me right now, it's early enough. I want people to push back. If I see any type of public money, who I want us to really zero in and house are people who are chronically homeless, specifically people the industry likes to talk about the 0 to 30%. People who work at Subway are within that 0 to 30%. I want to talk about let's house people who are mentally ill. Let's house people who are seriously suffering from addiction. To really zero in on the folks that are in tents all over this city. We've seen with the last bit of money that the Housing Bureau put out is most of those units are going to 50 to 60% of MFI, which means, it's people who can afford $800 and $900 rents. That, to me, there and those working class folks are there and are needed housing, but it's not, and people need to be real clear, this bond is not addressing the homeless issue.
Well, actually, I saw a pretty interesting article in the Oregonian, which was looking at how, and they quoted, I forget who they quoted, but it could have been you, I mean, in what the person was saying, that the bond is only, I forget the percentage, there's a smaller percentage of the housing is going for people who are in the 30% of the...
of medium income.
Right. And the rest of it is going to people who are within 60%, which means that they're making $40,000 to $50,000 a year.
Right.
And that those people only need about 2,000 units, whereas the other group, I think, was 23,000 units. So looking at the math, it seems like this initiative is really not addressing the problem.
I mean, from my perspective, it's not. And what's interesting, though, is a lot of those developers who've been making a lot of money off the system, who, quote, care, are like, yeah, great. Let's get behind this bond. My frustration is with the advocates, is to say, let's not just get along, to get along. I mean, we need to hold firm on some criteria around who's going to manage this money, how's it going to be spent, and not give over that to the Portland Housing Bureau.
Well, you said it's not too late because it's still a few months out. So what can people do to make sure that this thing that we're voting for in November actually is going to provide low-cost housing for people who need it?
Well, and to be honest, I feel a little bit of a lone voice on this. But, I would, reach out to the Welcome Home Coalition, also MACG, two groups that have worked really hard for this bond. And, to push them to say, all right, we got to make sure that this money goes to house people that are homeless and are in desperate need and are living on our streets.
Well, actually, if you're just tuning in right now, we're talking about affordable housing crises going on here in Portland and actually have been going on for quite a while. You mentioned, Rob, that it's been 20 years. I think 20 years ago, I remember feeling like, property, everything's doubling in cost. But it seems like it's spiraling out of control now as opposed to 20 years ago when a lot of people could still afford to live here.
Right.
Anyway, my guest this morning is Rob Justice, who's with Home First Development and who is trying to take a very active role in seeing that Portland remains a place that's affordable for the people who live here now to continue to live here. Another thing that I think is really turning people off about all the info that's going on has to do with design. And I've always thought that you'd get a lot more people to support having more apartment buildings in their neighborhoods if they fit in better. And one of the things that I learned at this neighborhood meeting I went to last month was that there are plans. I think the city is coming up with its next comprehensive plan in the next 2 years.
Right.
And one of those things is going to mandate design overlays, fancy term, so that the neighbors have some say in the design of buildings that go into their neighborhood. Right now, like in our neighborhood, there's no design overlay. And so the developer can just come in and build whatever they want and infuriate the neighborhood. So what we were found out in the meeting was it seemed like since there's like a window of maybe 18 months before the comprehensive plan will change things and make things a little bit more stringent for the developers, they're just going in like crazy and putting up as many projects as possible while they still have a free hand in whatever they want to do. Is that the case, do you think? And is there any way to stop that?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think what's you know, difficult is, you know, when you do that overlay, that design review, one, that increased the cost. So that's, you know, and then you start to get into battles over, you know, what's the siding, you know, and it does that push people to have to, you know, not only increase the cost, but increase the rents, you know, so the more, you know, and again, this is the catch 22. This is why if we had, you know, a different form of government, you know, to me, this is a little bit of a Band-Aid, you know, because, you know, all that overlay and that more governance to develop the, you know, this housing, you know, increase the cost for everybody. And there's architects and developers, you know, or I should say architects and general contractors that are happy to do that because they make more money. But no, it's a real tough issue. That's why I would really like to differentiate between the for-profit developers and, you know what, for-profit developers, absolutely hold their feet to the fire, you know, and to have a very different process. And again, talking about building quality units, but, you know, to have this mantra around affordable housing in that how can we reduce the cost to build affordable housing so that we can build more of it?
I guess another question I have, though, is does affordable housing have to be so awful, so ugly? Because I saw this design for a building that looked like that was these prefab modules that were being put together, and it really looked like a stack of shoeboxes.
You know, it's fascinating to me. So, you know, I encourage people to go to our website. You can get an idea of what we're building. You know, the apartments that we're building are garden-style apartments, primarily Craftsman. You know, with this very clear idea that they fit into the neighborhood, and our architect spends a lot of time kind of. But I look at it, you know, the design of a lot of these affordable housing projects, and it has nothing to do with the neighborhood. It has to do with winning a contest. It has to do with having an application that's going to go into the Housing Bureau, and, you know, and they like bells and whistles. And again, it's a beauty contest, and so they have to make it cool and the latest, you know, materials or whatever that might be, you know, so there's this whole other dynamic that has nothing to do with the neighborhood, the community, or even the low-income people that are going to live there.
Well, I don't know about looking cool. One of the first of these mixed-use buildings that was built in Sellwood on Tacoma around 17th, and I think it's a three-story building and there's commercial on the ground floor. The west-facing side of the wall.
Isn't that ugly?
Well, the thing that's most amazing is the west side wall has no windows, but it has the outline of windows drawn on it. And is that, like, that's really cheap. I mean, why are you, is it that much more expensive to put windows in than to draw pictures of windows on?
You know what? I've looked at that building because, you know, we have lots of friends in the neighborhood and we lived there for years. And I watched that building being built and And to me, I'm baffled on why and how that got designed that way. You know, so here's, and this might sound a little crass, though, and this is because, again, I'm focused on really trying to house low-income folks. You know, a lot of these issues and even density issues is a little bit of an issue for privileged folks, people that already have theirs, that are already in the neighborhood, that have their house. Primarily white privileged folks in Portland, You know, so I don't get too excited about it, even though, you know, I will agree there's some pretty ugly buildings and we need to be more thoughtful, and we're not.
Because I guess what I'm thinking is that when you put these kind of really weird ugly, because they're not just ugly, they're bizarrely ugly.
Yeah, well,
and you put them into
how.
A neighborhood, and then you're going to be moving people in there. You're, first of all, in fact, in a way, you're really creating a barrier between the people who already live there and the people who then move into these buildings. People who move into those buildings have no choice. But then they become antagonist to, or seen that way by the people who feel like this thing is an intrusion, a horrible, ugly, invasive intrusion on their way of life. And that's where I think that there's ways to do infill where you could build. I mean, there's some very nice infill that's been done in Selwood,
yeah,
until recently. And it seems to me something changed in the last 3 years where there was more money to be made all of a sudden to do things quick and dirty and ugly.
I think that's part of it. I also feel like, you know, I interface, you know, because we're building in Portland. So, you know, we have to take all of our buildings through the permit process. You know, part of my frustration in dealing, this has been true for a long time, with the city of Portland is the amount of arrogance that exists in these different bureaus, that it is about them. You know, I mean, the Portland Housing Bureau for me is, it's about the Housing Bureau and it's about their control and about how they do things. You know, that's true with a lot of other bureaus, you know, BDS, you know, transportation. In the end of the day, they're about their bureau. You know, and their ideas that get embedded into code. And, you know, and in the end, you know, they're not about, you know, the neighbor. And you do have, you know, this larger layer of planners that think about, you know, some of this stuff. But again, in that, you know, sometimes it's a little bit of an ivory tower. You know, people are in isolation. And part of that is they can be because of the form of government. We don't have representatives, you know, on city council that are saying, wait a minute, what are you doing in our neighborhood? You know, we don't have that type of representation. So to me, it goes back to a form of government that isn't working for anybody.
I was just thinking of two cases of people who, in the neighborhoods they live in, and actually I think they both live in Eastmoreland. But one is Kate Brown, who got very upset about the bullseye glass contamination because it was going through her neighborhood.
Sure.
And I think Charlie Hales also lives in Eastmoreland, and he's gotten concerned about some of the issues in Eastmoreland. It'd be nice to see him have the same concern about issues on the other side of the railroad tracks.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and that's why you have groups like in East Portland who say, we don't even want to be part of this city because we don't have anybody that represents us. You know, and there is kind of some real asinine ideas at City Hall. I've had this conversation with a couple of city commissioners. Well, we don't want to invest in East Portland, the East Portland that they've been pushing low-income people. We don't want to invest there because, you know, we don't want to gentrify that area too. Well, do you have to gentrify an area by putting in sidewalks, fixing streets?
In the last few moments, I just want to talk about what we can do. I mean, you're doing it on your level.
Yeah, sure.
But what can other people do to really turn this around?
Well, you know, I think there is, you know, trying to have some serious conversations. Again, there are organizing groups, Welcome Home Coalition, you know, MACG that is advocating for affordable housing. Encourage them and push them to become a little more sophisticated. And that they are in a position, you know, and this bond is coming up to put some teeth on that. You know, don't give over, you know, try to win the day, but give over to the Housing Bureau, you know, well, you manage it because they haven't managed, you know, you know, this effort well, you know, since they began in 2009. So I think it's trying to be real specific about who is going to be housed with this money and how many units are going to be built.
So what kind of teeth do you see putting into it?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, who's going to manage it. I think that's a big question for me. When the county recently had some money they're going to invest in affordable housing, I was encouraging them to give it to a foundation. You know, let the foundation give it out at grants rather than have this big bureaucracy, you know, manage it. You know, I think the other is, you know, some criteria of we want to see a better plan that's, you know, going to serve more people and demand that of the Portland Housing Bureau and Commissioner Saltzman's office.
Well, I want to end by getting back to the story I started at the beginning of this building, us going up at the corner of 13th and Spokane and Selwood. Among the things that have been spray painted on it are, of course, four stories is obscene. It was also one point it said, "Goodbye, sunshine." And the other one that's up there now says something like, "No parking is idiotic," or something like that. So it's kind of three mantras there that I feel like we have to face all those, which are people in the neighborhood are feeling an assault. Why? I mean, how do we make four stories not be obscene, and so that we still have sunshine in our neighborhoods? And then the other part, and this is like very little time to go into the whole issue about parking, but what about parking?
Well, you know what? One of the things we've committed on the units that we're building is, guess what? We have parking.
And it doesn't cost that much more, right?
Yeah. You could do, you know, and then so what it does do in some of these neighborhoods, it really does push the question of, should that density even be allowed? And should we be really looking at, if we're going to increase density, making sure that's someplace where there's really good transportation? And this is the interesting thing, and this is kind of a mystery, but is this dynamic of this focus on the inner core of Portland. You know, the Portland Housing Bureau, developers, they all want to focus on the inner core of Portland. There's a lot of rest of the city that could be developed. So, you know, part of that effort is looking at how do we develop, quality communities in other parts of the city.
Well, one last thing, I guess, is looking at how do we have the four stories? How can we build four-story buildings that aren't going to be an affront to the existing neighborhoods?
Well, you know what? There's some areas of part of town that they shouldn't be built. One. But if they are going to be built, they absolutely should adhere to the neighborhood, and in that process, unfortunately, I don't know if Portland has a good. I mean, we do have kind of this design review. To be honest, when I look at what's being built and what's gone through design review, I scratch my head.
And in the city, the building is right near here on the Burnside Bridgehead. They defy the design review. They put in these ugly black windows when they were supposed to put in clear glass.
But ugly.
And the city's going to pay for them to replace them.
Of course. Well, that's because, again, people aren't as conscious or aware of the influence that white developers have at City Hall.
And on that note, we have to leave. But anyway, thank you very much for joining us, Rob.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Rob Justice, who's with Home First Development, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you would like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll be talking with Dan Flores, author of Coyote America. My engineer is Natasha Delapine. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Ricky Lee Jones. Thanks for listening.
After closing time at the country fair, I detect the El Supremo in the room at the top of the stairs. Well, I've been around the world, and I've been in Washington too. And in all my travels, the facts unravel, I found this to be true. Well, the poor people sleeping with the shade on the light. Poor people sleeping, all the stars come out at night. Poor people sleeping with the shade on the light. While the poor people sleeping, all the stars come out at night. Corner with a rose.